What does being an Asian American woman mean to you in 2017? I'm having a hard time answering this question because I feel like I constantly have to defend my place as an Asian American woman. I'm 18 years old, and most of the time I still feel like a child, like a little girl. In the rare time that I do feel like an adult or a woman, I feel like adults will often tell me otherwise, you know, that I'm too irresponsible or that I'm still just a girl. I'm also biracial. I'm half white, half Vietnamese, and I get questioned a lot about what I am. So it's hard to call myself Asian. I have a hard time doing that.
Hey everybody, you're tuned in to a special International Women's Day episode of Pacific Underground. I'm Jenna Yokoyama.
And I'm Tabitha Tiu. Happy International Women's Day, Jenna.
Happy International Women's Day. For today's special episode, we're going to be bringing you a couple really exciting things. First, we have a Vox Pop.
I really enjoyed it because we asked several Asian American women and femme-spec Asian-identified intersectional people on what it means to them to be an Asian American woman in 2017. And the answers I thought were really fascinating.
Yeah, I really liked how there was sort of this spectrum of answers. But at the same time, there was a lot of, I want to say, themes that were kind of running through everybody's answers.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I feel like we didn't hear a lot of really surprising answers. And in that way, it's sort of like frustrating to realize that Asian women in many ways have still a long ways to go in terms of our struggle.
Yeah, we still share a lot of the same experiences. Even though we don't know each other or have any connection to each other, we still share a lot of similar experiences. And that can be frustrating, but I also think it can be kind of unifying too.
Then after the Vox Pop, we're going to be bringing you an interview with the comedy duo SJ and Ginny, where we're going to be talking to them about their new YouTube series, Quiet Tiny Asian. And oh my gosh, that's so funny. It's so good. So before we get back to hearing those responses, I want to ask you, Tabitha, what does being an Asian American woman in 2017 mean to you?
Oh, so many things. So in the past few years, since conversations about non-binary and gender fluidity and a gender spectrum have become more prominent, it sort of made me re-examine my own like identity and gender. Mm. And I very much identify as a cis woman. I'm comfortable with she, her pronouns. And it's reaffirmed my sort of my feminine identity and also my goals to fight sexism and fight oppressions.
Yeah, I feel like that has really resonated with me recently too. When it comes to gender expression, that's something that has really been something I've been thinking about a lot, because growing up, I was always labeled as a tomboy. And then also as I got older and I started to explore my own like sexual orientation and sexuality, I feel like a lot of the choices I made as a younger person, I made based on gender expectation, and that I had a lot of kind of issues about like self-esteem and understanding who I was because of gender expression. And like you're saying, like it's just sort of recently that this discussion has come into the mainstream and it has become almost acceptable to have in a much more complex way. And I feel like because I'm like super Japanese in the sense that I'm always just trying to fit into society and like assimilate, I think it's only recently now that I've allowed myself to actually have that discussion with myself and to have an in-depth discussion and have that like feel okay. So I've been wondering a lot about, like, what would it have been to grow up if I could be growing up now? Like, if I was born now, that term tomboy wouldn't even be used on me. It would be more, or the way I was, especially as a child, was more like gender nonconforming. And I just wonder, what does that mean for people's identity when you are given a much more robust vocabulary to explore your identity with? Because like now as an adult, I just sort of feel like a confused adult. And so I'm enjoying all these discussions that I see happening in our society around like sex versus gender. But yeah, like another thing that I feel like when it comes specifically to 2017, I want to say that this is the year of me being a woman who gives zero Fs. And I don't know if I like chose that versus that just seems to be something that I also see in common with many, many women, especially Asian women, where it's just like, oh my God, this is the year I just can't care. I can't care about everybody else anymore. It is time. It is time to like speak up for myself and to own myself. So let's get back to that clip that we heard there in the opening. This is Annika. She's 18 years old. You know, now she just points out it's a difficult question to actually answer. Like, what is it to be an Asian woman? And as we just pointed out, like, there's a lot of answers, and thank goodness there's a lot of answers these days. So here's Annika.
I'm also biracial. I'm half white, half Vietnamese. And I get questioned a lot about what I am. So it's hard to call myself Asian. I have a hard time doing that, especially when I do feel rejected by a lot of Asian people. Like my own Vietnamese family, I can't speak Vietnamese, so it's hard to fully communicate with them or connect with them. But at the end of the day, I feel like no matter what people choose to label me as or what boxes to put me in, I would say that I am an Asian American woman. And Asian American and woman are all essential parts of my identity. And I'm proud to say that I am. I am proud. And so I guess my answer to the question would be that being an Asian American woman in 2017 means constantly having to defend my place as that, constantly having to face microaggressions telling me that I'm not that, and just feeling in between Asian and white, woman and child, American and not American all at once. So, yeah, it's kind of hard.
So, in many ways, I feel like in 2017, as in 2016, being a woman is only one of the marginalized identities I have. So, I feel all kinds of oppression, all kinds of ways, all kinds of times of the day. Pick one. It's happening. And being a woman could be the one that, because this is how I visibly present as female and as feminine and as femme, but living in Portland, my Asian American identity is constantly scrutinized, whether it's online or in person. So there's a lot of assumptions made. My last name confounds people because why is it a Latinx name? But I'm Filipino and looking Asian. It's just a million things that just add up. But on top of it, I'm also queer. I'm also a mother. I'm also all of these other identities that are not any more important than being a woman, but it also makes my experience from other mothers, from other white mothers, from other white mothers of disabled children also, that is a very different experience because I'm Asian American. It makes my experience also different because I have some level of privilege too. I do not have a black body. I can be free of some of that danger and risk in real life and in person. I mean, in real life, I can be free of that, or online too. So there's certain ways that I'm navigating this space, and that's not any different than what I've been having to do in 2016. But in 2017, I feel like I am having more courage to let people know immediately that I am not going to accept their oppression, their microaggressions, like whatever is happening, I'm just going to put a full stop to it in 2017.
I'm Tracy, and I'm 38 years old, and I am a woman. I think most of the time I go through life not very aware of my gender, because I guess I'm pretty lucky in that way, and I don't have to think about it, and I just go about my day. But when I do think about it, it's because something has come up, like I'm having an experience that's bringing my gender to my awareness, right? Like I'm watching a TV show or overhearing a conversation or something that was said on the radio. But otherwise, I don't think about being a woman like while I'm eating dinner, for example. An experience that has really brought awareness about my gender was having my son 4 years ago, and just what does it mean to be a woman, because I'm watching him grow up in this world, and it's forcing me to think about gender in new ways, right? Like, what is his gender? And I mean, I say his, and I assume he's a boy, but, you know, is that right? I don't know. But, you know, conversations like this that I have inside my head also bring awareness to my gender and what does it mean to me to be a woman and an Asian American woman. And at this time, now in 2017, it definitely means standing up and being loud and not giving into the stereotype of being quiet and cute and hanging back and letting somebody else come to the front. You know, 2017 is about being loud and being the one in front and using my power as the model minority to stand up for other people of color, for other marginalized groups, to uplift their stories and their voices. Is even though I look like an immigrant to some people, because American means a white person to so many people still, right? A person of color does not mean American to many people. But now in 2017, I have to stand up and be loud, and I can't worry about who thinks I'm American and who doesn't. And I need to take the privilege that I have, the power that I have, to help other people.
My name is Grace Wong, and I'm 18 years old. I would say being Asian American in 2017 is a very dislocating experience. I am either Asian in a space or I am an American in a space, and I always feel like I have to play up one or the other or suppress one or the other to try and fit in, but that in no space I feel like I can just be me, Grace Wong, Asian American. I think that comes from being a person in a very white community, a person of color in a very white community, I would say. I grew up with white friends, white teachers, white role models, and for a long time I thought to be successful, to fit in, that I had to play up my Americanness and play down my Asianness. Junior year, I got to go to a diversity conference that opened my eyes to the special uniqueness of having a bicultural identity. In the past 2 years, I've tried really hard to embrace the Asian part of my identity. I think now I'm seen as that Asian girl who's really into diversity and inclusion work. I run an affinity group that talks with other students who are Asian and Asian American, and I think they think that this is also a dislocating experience. Recently, we've been really focused on this idea of hyphen nation, Asian-American, Chinese-American, and what that means to be really an American. I don't feel like I fit in here. But then again, I don't feel like I fit in China either. Last year, I took a trip to southern rural China to try and connect with my ancestral roots. In walking the rice paddies at Yunnan, I knew that this wasn't home. I'm not a rice farmer. Portland is home. And in restaurants, I would ask for the bathroom in English. I would try and play at my Americanness. I felt that I didn't belong here, and people around me shouldn't think that this was my home. Even though I speak fluent Mandarin, I refuse to speak it. I think that it's really hard to find a place where it feels like you belong, where all of you can be all of you. I'm really cognizant of these spaces because I think I want this place that I can say that this is my place where I can be my whole me, and I don't feel the pressure to, you know, fit in one way or the other. I'm not sure if I'll ever find that home, but I think the socio-political climate right now is such that we have to raise our voices as people of color, women of color, and show people that the hyphen nation is alive and well and strong and that we can't be divided. And at the same time, in these spaces, I don't feel like I belong. I don't feel like I can be my full self. And that really sucks. At the same time, I would say my bicultural identity gives me a unique perspective. I think I see things in ways that no one else does, and that I love my American culture, but I also love my Chinese culture. I love how I've blended the two. I think of it as green tea with milk. I know no one would probably put milk in green tea, but that's how I feel like this beverage concoction that's not like anything else, but just like me, and that there's something unique and beautiful and special, and that maybe one day I'll find a home, but maybe one day it'll just feel okay to feel different.
Being an Asian American woman in 2017 means that you constantly feel like you are navigating other people's perceptions and expectations of you. You feel like sometimes people want to reduce you to a collection of stereotypes instead of as your own fully formed human being. Now, some of these stereotypes, as we all know, people think that you are timid, shy, submissive, that you have to live up to harmful beauty standards, like being very skinny and slender. Lots of other microaggressions that we have to watch out for, that we feel hypervigilant about, being mistaken for other Asians, even if we're not related. An incident that happened to me one time. Once one of my neighbors saw me from afar, and they thought that they were speaking to their girlfriend rather than me, who is not even related to this other Asian person. In addition, the perpetual foreigner bit, as a American-born Chinese Filipino person, I am too Americanized to ever fit in fully if I was to go back to visit China or the Philippines. But living here in America, just one look at your face and people automatically assume they know your whole story, do things like compliment you on your English when that is actually your native language. At the same time, it's important to also recognize and check our own privilege too, when it comes to things like economic stability and education, and use these talents and resources to help other marginalized people as well.
What being a woman in 2017 means to me is, or what's important about being a woman is being like an intersectional feminist woman and being an inclusive woman and bringing in everyone into the conversation, including men, and especially men, because I think the way that I see feminism is it's just as important for men as for women. And like the way that our society is structured is just as harmful to men as it is to women in a lot of ways, you know, and it's important to like toxic masculinity is real, and it's very bad for men as well as women. So yeah, I have lots to say about that. But yeah.
Do you think there is anything problematic about International Women's Day?
Oh, Sure. I mean, probably. I haven't had a chance to think about it a lot, but I feel like, I don't know a lot about the background or what's going on for it, but I feel like the term, like, terms women and men can be a little bit difficult sometimes because not everyone identifies as, you know, along the binary in that way. So, it's always like nowadays I feel like you have to kind of be mindful of using like just like black and white terms like man versus woman or male versus female, or because there's so much that's just a societal construct and so you have to be mindful of that. But I mean, I definitely generally think it's good and helpful to bring to light situations of women around the world and to focus on women and to like talk about women's issues because they need way, way, way more attention. Especially in this country and right now, I think it's super important.
One of the things that I feel is problematic about International Women's Day, it's just a day that I've just recently become aware of. And I think it's great, and you're right, that women face a lot more, far more oppressions than men. But I do think that maybe not have like an International Men's Day, but maybe have like an International Men's Emotions Day.
Oh, yeah, or totally.
Because I do think as the role of women has definitely changed in society, we also need to change like roles that men can do and boys, mm-hmm. and like teach boys that it's okay to have emotions and okay to feel and have empathy. Mm-hmm. And if you like the color pink, there's nothing wrong with that. If you want to be like, if you identify as a cis man, it is perfectly fine for you to maybe dress up, wear some jewelry, wear a flamboyant shirt, and there's nothing wrong with doing that, with expressing yourself like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Let's turn it louder a little bit.
Another thing that being a woman means to me is being a keeper of culture and history. I'm not saying only women can do this. Obviously, a person of any gender can do this, but just my experience in life has been that women are the ones to maintain family traditions or cultural experiences, and those are things that are important to me, right? Connection to my Japanese culture, and I want to maintain those things for my family, and I think that's something that is also going to be important to me now in 2017 as the government or other people try to tell me that my story and my life are not as important, and I will just have to stand up and say, you're wrong. I am important, my family's important, and our story's important, and just be loud about it and keep it going and do what I can to have my story and other people's stories heard.
What does being a Viet-American woman mean to me in 2017? I feel the burden of holding space for the things and the people I care about even more, now that so many people's lives are in jeopardy thanks to the current political administration. And I remind myself daily of words said by the Black filmmaker and writer Tanya Steele, who once wrote, "I will stop contorting my being to accommodate white neuroses. That's my new civil rights movement." In the past, I felt that urge to contort myself, to make others comfortable, and I think so much of that was inspired by what other people expected of me. And of course, deep down, I still want to shrink and obsess over whether other people like me. But when you shrink, you let other people talk over you and tell your story for you. You can't be there for the things you care about. We can't let that happen anymore.
My name is Amaya Marie. I'm 16 years old, and I am half Japanese and half Chinese. I am currently a junior at Catlin Gable High School in Portland, Oregon. I was born on the East Coast in New York City and moved to Portland when I was 7 years old with my mom and my two sisters. I am currently I have always been the middle child of three girls. And I've grown up in an all-girl single-parent household since I was very, very young. Because of my family structure, I've always had to really identify with my gender, and I've had to be in a place where my family and my gender come together in a very beautiful way. Every single day, it's basically a sorority house. It's just me and my sisters and my mom in our small two-bedroom apartment, which we've been crammed in for the past 10 years. So it's a very small space, but it's also made us a very tight-knit family. Growing up, I've always had a pretty good idea of what being a woman has meant. I think because of my family situation, I've always had women's issues in my face, and I've always had, it's always been a big topic of conversation about how I can do what anybody else can do, regardless of my gender. And as an Asian American woman, it's also been very important for my mom to have my sisters and I understand that being a woman and being an Asian American woman is especially difficult in the society that we are in today. And I think that's especially true in Portland, Oregon, maybe less so recently, when I've been in a situation where I've been the only Asian in my class. I've been the only person of color in my class, in 30 kids at a local public school or local high school. And that's been a very very normal situation for me since I've moved to Portland in 2007. Yeah, but my mom has worked with my family just in the nature of how it's structured, where I don't want to say we're not traditional, but we are a very untraditional, Asian American household. I'm first generation and second or third generation on both sides, and I'm no longer talking. I have no contact with my father, he's not part of my life. So I haven't grown, and we also aren't in contact with our grandparents very much in any way. And so I've grown up in a basically all-American household. I've grown up not being able to relate to the Asians around me, and especially the Asian girls around me, who've talked about the struggle of having, or, okay, that's not true. Well, because I grew up with my grandparents really by my side until I was like 4, 5, or 6 years old. And so I had that piece of of being put into a box. I think, at least in my experience, being Japanese and Chinese, the Asian culture with women is very boxy. It's very it's very confining. And so my mom having three girls who range in lots of like teen ages at this point, she's always made it her parenting an essential focus as to make it so that we are confident in who we are, and we have no doubt in our minds that we can do anything regardless of any obstructions in our way. And if that's our race or our gender, then that's way out the window. I think it's really hard as a woman to realize that, or maybe realize that in everyday settings, and going to school, getting on the bus, and trying to ignore the fact that some guy is following you, or you're being catcalled on your way to school. And it's really hard to have that, I think, as a part of your life. But as a girl growing up in more of an urban area where there are a lot, I don't know, there's more of a culture for, female, I don't want to say targeting, you have to start getting used to that. So that's something as a girl that I have to live with every day. And I'm so grateful. I'm honestly so grateful to have a family who's very supportive of that and being like, fight the power. Like, you are who you are, and you have what it takes. My mom had my sisters and I really early, too early, she says, right out of during graduate school. And at the same time, she was still able to go to a really elite college and get her law degree and raise three kids while simultaneously, quote unquote, taking classes and passing, and raise us in a way that we are very, I wouldn't say introspective, like human beings in general. It's really beautiful to be in my house and watching my sisters and I grow up with such a supportive mom who's so powerful and who's so beautiful in the sense of how she interacts with us and how she interacts with the world and all of the craziness that comes with our family. We have this running joke that our house is a sorority house, and also it's basically a soap opera, or we need to have a reality TV show. But I always ask my mom, like, how did you do it? Like, what's your secret? How did you raise us? Because I love the way that my sisters turn out in so many ways. And she always says, like, her biggest value has been just to make it so that we have no doubt in our abilities, I think. And maybe even if then being aware of the obstructions in our path, but also being very aware that we have the capabilities to overcome them. So all in all, being a woman, being an Asian American woman means a lot to me. It means that I am powerful, I want to say. Maybe that's cheesy, but it really does. It means that I get to step out of the box.
Heaven on earth is broken. I want to give birth to words unspoken, but I'm choking. Everybody trying to be seen on screen, force feed me a scene. I'm just trying to intervene. Too deep for the mainstream, too street for IVVs. University is robbing money, still buying coffee, no cream. Telling him in my color of melanin. Got soul, but not a whole lot of green. Too few stop to think, they're busy building the machines. Accumulate the sense, common sense to me. To pennies rhyme like me, ZZZ up. I'm tired of the same old ish. Go keep up that ish, copy paste generic. Locate my remix and my wordplay. Twist, turn the page, study my resistance. Girl up here loud, I'm so rude. In a man's world, working harder than the dude. Be a mathematics, stats on the maxes. Equations, you can't claim on her taxes. My broke back is collapsing from kissing ass. Too fast while the time is ticking. Murdered and missing, too many women. Too many queens dead on the scene. Never forgotten, forever missed. I remember you on my campus. Paint your crown, it's loud and proud. It's understood, with this world flip attitudes. Did it excuse more gratitude. Indigenous life misconstrued the truth. I used to pray to a white God, now I head nod church in the booth. Cause God isn't no limit, she's in his Adidas. Dancing nowhere and in between us. Synonymous to androgynous, you a Nazi. Why do we divide and conquer? Why do we divide and conquer?
Listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO Portland.
So Tabitha, have you finally seen that YouTube series that I sent to you, Quiet Tiny Asian?
Yes.
Yeah, do you like it?
And so, yes, so much of it like resonates with me.
If you haven't seen Quiet Tiny Asian is a YouTube series of 5 shorts that was written by the comedy duo SJ and Jenny. And it's about what it's like to be an Asian American woman. And so the premise of it is that the main character, Quiet Tiny Asian, is explaining to her 3-year-old niece about what it is to be an Asian in America. Here's a clip from episode 1.
Happy birthday, Ari.
Now that you're 3 years old, I have a few tips for you on how to be an Asian woman in America. Lesson 1. People see you in a very specific way.
Guys, I'm so sorry I'm late.
Oh my God, I didn't even hear you come in. You're so quiet.
Look like a ninja.
She is like a ninja. You are like a ninja.
So quiet.
So quiet.
I know, it used to bother me too, but now I just post one angry tweet a week, and I feel for that moment marginally better. Let's go on to lesson two.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I feel. Like, I do the one angry Facebook post or a tweet a week, and I call that self-care. So did you watch the entire series?
Yes.
Which one was your favorite?
Gosh, I really like the Asians are always together.
Yeah, Asians are always together. That one is about how no matter what, anytime there's two Asians in a space, everybody assumes that you're together. The worst is going to a restaurant and then like everyone's like, oh, are you like a party of five? And you're like, what? I'm just by myself.
Clearly, Jenna, this means we need to avoid going to places together.
Yeah, I kind of wonder this when we like go places. Does everybody like, are they confused? Do they think we're the same person?
I know, right? We go to Nong's so often. I kind of wonder if the people at Nong's are like, oh, it's her again, when it's just the two of us.
Even more, is do they wonder if there's just three Nongs in the restaurant? And then they can't tell us all apart.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Well, we spoke to SJ and Ginny and we asked them, you know, what was the inspiration to create this video series?
You know, just existing as an Asian American woman for 29 years, you know, you start to like get pretty mad. And after so many years of just having to put up with some, you know, stereotypes and microaggressions, there was just like a day that I really wanted to create a series that really unpacked them. And within the past year, I feel like there's been so much conversation about racism and race, and I have not seen a lot of comedy series specifically or comedy videos that portray Asian American racism. And like besides your like, you know, the like small BuzzFeed videos and things like that. But I was just like really not feeling like I was a part of the conversation, and I was really sick of that. And then there was this like one article that came up in October of 2016. Michael Luo he's a columnist at New York Times. He wrote this piece about his family in the Upper East Side of Manhattan getting screened at by a woman to go back to China. And it was this pretty, like, I would say viral in that, like, it was really, really popular and it got, like, a huge response from the Asian American community and also non-Asians, like, whoa, this happens and, like, this is awful and whatever, all this stuff. And so I was that, like, I don't know, hearing someone else's story, especially someone as prominent as Michael Luo, was kind of gave me that like light under the fire under my butt to really actually make something and produce it and put it out there so that other Asian Americans can also feel heard.
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, who is this video series for in your mind? Like, is it for non-Asian people to understand the Asian experience, or is it for Asian Americans to have something to relate to?
It's a little bit of both. I would say it's probably more of the latter. It's more of that I want Asian Americans to see and feel represented in the comedy and the videos and the media that they see. And so there's just like so much validation in seeing like these very like nuanced and like subtle situations happening to you, and you're expected to kind of ignore them or, you know, let it go because it wouldn't be worth it. Seeing that and being validated kind of materializes it in your brain as real, like your racism is real. And I feel like for so many years, personally, I felt that my racism wasn't real because it was so fleeting and so many people did not understand it. So that kind of like leads me to, yes, I would like for non-Asians to also see it, to see the frequency with which this happens and also like how ridiculous it can be. Like, you know, oh, it's eating cheese an Asian thing?
Let's go on to lesson three. Everything you do, feel, or say is an Asian thing.
Oh my God, I love birds.
I had this Thai Lebanese friend who was like obsessed with birds. Is that an Asian thing?
Ooh, I love cheese.
Is that an Asian thing?
Yeah, that is something that I've gotten multiple times in my life, you know, is liking birds an Asian thing. Like, so it sounds ridiculous, but it is true. And it is really like based in deep, what I will say is hatred for Asian Americans, whether you know it or not.
When I first watched the series, you know, there were so many of the experiences that we so identify as racist, like right offhand. Like, I've been called a ninja a lot too. You just sit there like, yeah, I guess I'm a ninja. But the thing that really resonated with me that I've not seen addressed by other people is the second episode, The Tiny Problems.
Yes!
Lesson two. As a tiny Asian, your problems are also tiny.
My period sucks right now.
Oh, shut up. I hear Asians have like the lightest periods.
Your hair looks like
shut up. You have that straight, thick, jet black, amazing Asian hair.
My body feels gross today.
Shut up. You have like a tiny Asian body.
Yes, Ari, it is rooted in their inherent racism, but it's up to us to grow a thick skin.
It just goes back to the silencing of Asians, or, you know, whenever you silence someone, like, that is prohibitive and that is destructive, and it prevents people from feeling like they matter. So, like, when you have a complaint like, you know, my stomach hurts because of cramps, like, silencing someone with this weird frame compliment is just, like, devaluing your experience as a human. So like, I know I'm getting a little bit deep here, but it's kind of like, I hate being seen as not a human. Like, I want to be seen as a human and not an Asian. and this weird perception of Asian, you know? So that was like the most important thing to me for that episode was just like, don't tell me to shut up, or don't tell me to, like, that I should be grateful, or that, you know, you just said that you should be lucky. Just let me live, you know?
Yeah, and then I love the way that it wraps up. It was really surprising, just because all the other episodes were very kind of lighthearted, and then the way it just ends.
Oh, excuse us.
Hey, watch out! And go back to your own country.
Lesson five. No matter what you do, you can't win.
Right? Like,
it's very sad.
It's sad, but it feels so true. And, you know, unfortunately, that is something I feel like the women in my family taught me growing up, too. And that's why I felt like that episode just really brought all together, was just like, wow, this is the kind of advice that is passed on from one Asian American woman to the next. It's like, look, no matter what you do, you just can't win. And so even though that's disheartening, it's just so authentic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because as immigrants, you are always perceived from the perspective of the majority, and that is the white people, as white people. So you, like, I remember talking to my Filipino American friend, and she was saying how, like, her parents were always just wanting to please white people in order to just fit in. And I think, you know, even as first generation, second generation Asian Americans, like, we are brought up to do that as well. And so this idea of like winning and losing is like, it's really sad. My mom watched the series, and I was like, what'd you think? And she's like, it was sad. Aww, I was like, but Emma, wasn't it funny? And she's
like, no. Yeah. I really like that we ended on that more serious note, because I think it speaks to stakes. Like, what's the stake here? The reason that this is important is that this all adds up to violence in our society. That's very real. And, you know, we're living in that moment. We actually, let's see, we filmed it after the election, but you'd written it before the election.
Yeah.
So it all, I don't know, it ended up lining up sort of perfectly with, unfortunately, with our national situation.
Yeah.
Like, these are the stakes, and that it's important.
Yeah. It is like, I don't know, it's pretty crazy to me that, like, you know, judgments that were created so long ago about, like, Chinese people or, like, Korean people or any, like, Indian people going back to their country, like,
that's an insult that was like prevalently used in like the 1700s. Like word for word is still being used in 2017. So I don't know, like that just blows my mind. It really burst the bubble on the idea of progress. Like, if there's progress, show me progress.
So you said you wrote it, the sketch, before the elections. So then when you were shooting it after the elections, did you end up making any changes because of the election, or was it that inconsequential?
Okay, that's a good question. Did we make changes to it?
I feel like we didn't.
Yeah, I don't think we did. Because it was already such a bleak series that, like, I don't know how much bleaker we could get.
I think there was, like, a renewed, like, urgency.
Yeah. I think especially, like, artists around the country, like, after the, like, and comedians after the election was kind of like, well, what is comedy? Like, what is funny now that
we have? What's worth our time?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it felt really good because, in general, it's been hard to do comedy, and like among our peers in the New York comedy community, there has been a little bit of a pause on people putting out content. And I think the question everyone's asking themselves is like, you know, is this even an important thing to say? Like, is it a time for my silly observations about The Bachelorette? And I think we'll bounce back from that. So it was really nice. It was a good way to deal with the things that were going on. Be like, no, like the project that we're working on right now, like, has something to say, is relevant, is important,
and like feeds us creatively.
Yeah.
One thing that I really enjoy about the series is the things that you've chosen to talk about, the five things that you've really chosen to point out. Because like one thing that I think people automatically think about when they think about especially Asian American women and when it comes to racism is the like fetishization and the over like sexualization of Asian American women. And that tends to be the focus. And so that's why I really enjoyed like the Tiny Problems episode and just like the subtle things like the Asian thing where it's like, okay, yeah, there's those people who do things that are just so blatant and so oppressive and it's easy to understand. But so much of what is racism for Asian American women especially are like those little things that you even get from like your friends or just, yeah, like, oh, is that an Asian thing? Or just everybody thinking that you're with the Asians, that all Asians are together. It's like,
let's go on to lesson four. An oldie, but a goodie. All Asians are together.
Twins? Are you two twins? Sisters? Hey. Hey, are you guys twins? Lesbians? Lesbians. Like, nice.
These kind of micro things are what leads to systemic racism. I mean, like, if, you know, there's a reason why, like, a certain resume will be pulled over another Asian-sounding name's resume, you know? Like, it starts small, but it's so, so pervasive and powerful in, like, I mean, I see it in like, especially in the political world right now, there are very few Asian American influencers who are politicians who can create systemic change. And like, I truly believe that it starts from these kind of like backwards perceptions of Asian people of being maybe not having an opinion or not speaking English, you know, like, oh, I'm not going to talk to this person because he may or may not speak English, like, you know.
And so, SJ, I'm just wondering, for you, has this been an empowering thing for you to do this series?
Yeah, personally, yes, this has been very empowering because this was not something that I felt I would be allowed to do or like kind of brave enough to do because I would be scared of the response. Like just even like in my like early 20s and whatever, I was really scared of people, other Asians viewing me as not strong or not having a thick skin in order to deal with this stuff. Like, why are you making such a big deal of this? It's like, you know, it's actually like letting them win
Like, you're letting them win by being bothered. And so, like, having, I mean, like, kind of putting my foot down and saying, like, we have to make this, really did empower me. And then, like, receiving this, the response was super validating. And I don't know, honestly, like, this is just the tip of the iceberg for me. Like, this is a series basically showing, like, 100 racist scenarios, but like I would want to see more than this, like in my next series that deals with Asian racism. You know, like this is a very simple series, but like I would love to see the evolved version of this. Like we don't really see the responses from Quiet Tiny Asian, the character, and like what would that be? So when we're thinking about season two, I'm very excited, and
the people are demanding a season two.
Oh yeah, oh yeah,
oh yeah. I'm part of the demanding crowd. Well, I'm very. I'm part of the crowd that's demanding a season two because as soon as the last episode happened, I was sad. I was like talking to my computer, like why is it ending? Where's the rest of it?
You know, we might just have to give them a second season. Someone just needs to give us a lot of money. The reason it ended was because we ran out of cash.
Yeah, we produced this all on $500, which is...
Oh, wow.
Literally nothing.
That's impressive.
Yeah. Like, no one got paid.
Like, literally no one got paid, so...
Our animator got paid,
yes.
She has hard skills.
Yeah.
No, but, yeah, we'd love to go back and, you know, increase the... scale, and there's no shortage of material.
Yeah,
we'd love to do that.
What? More rules? We don't want more rules. We want to be free women.
That was comedy duo SJ and Jenny. You can learn more about them on their website at sjandjenny.com, or you can find them on the socials at SJ and Jenny. To find that video series, just go into YouTube and search for Quiet Tiny Asian. It's totally worth watching. Well, I guess this wraps it up for our special International Women's Day episode. So Tabitha, do you have any predictions for women in 2017?
Fight the power, fight Trump, fight the oppressions. Speak out against these things. Don't forget to take care of yourself.
Yeah, I feel like that is 2017. Yeah, I feel like just in listening to today's episode, you know, it's just that's what 2017 seems to be about. I mean, like, you know, this was the year we had the Women's March, no matter how controversial it was and how much more inclusive it could have been. I mean, this is the first time we've seen women kind of rise en masse, at least within our generation. So hopefully it can become more inclusive and can be an even bigger fight because, my goodness, what a year we have.
Mm-hmm. What another 4 years we have.
But I will say this. Even though we are going through what is admittedly a frightening time, it seems at least to be getting people to move into positions of speaking out about oppressions that have existed long before the new administration came in. So hopefully this will yield a bunch of positive change in the long run if we can, you know, keep fighting off the fascists. Keep punching them Nazis.
Yep.
Okay, so...
Totes down with that.
Yeah. Well, make sure to tune in for our next show, which is on Friday, March 24th at 11 a.m. for an all-new episode. We're going to be talking about our accents. Yeah, so having been born here, I've always had an American accent, but the accent that I'm using right now on the show is not actually how I sounded growing up. So we'll be talking to guests who have consciously changed their accent over time, and we're also going to be talking about code switching and everything that goes into speaking English in America as an Asian American. So tune in on Friday, March 24th at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO Community Radio.
Thanks this month to all of our contributors, Annika, Tracy, Jennifer, Elena, Amika Badillo, Grace Wong, Pamela Santos, Ameo Okamoto, Soleil Ho, and Jennifer Imus. Thank you for lending us your views and voices for International Women's Day. For a list of all the music played in today's episode, check out our Facebook page at PAC Underground or on our SoundCloud and iTunes at Pacific Underground.
Pacific Underground is a production of KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Thank you very much also to our AM Public Affairs Director, Derek Crooks. Thank you, as always, to KBOO Community Radio for the studio space, love, and support. For Pacific Underground, I'm Jenny Yokoyama.
And I'm Tabitha Teo.
Thanks for tuning in.